Hey, Jimmy.
Hi.
I've got your favorite dinner ready downstairs. Mayonnaise.
Oh, what?
Oh, thanks. I'll be right down.
Okay, Jimmy, bye.
Mayonnaise.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Paid Search Podcast. My name is Jason Rothman. As always, I'm joined by the great Chris Schaefer. Chris, how's it going today?
Good. It's harking back to old times, the drawn out yes. I used to think I hated the long, creepy yes, but ever since Jimmy was introduced, I miss the yes. The mayonnaise? Yeah, Chris, really? Mayonnaise?
I was at a doctor's appointment this morning, and I was like... We were going over very important stuff, and all I was doing sitting there, and I could not remember what Jimmy's name was. Like, I was trying to do the voice in my head and trying to get the name back, and I was like, all right, the stepdad is Roger, and then I was like, I couldn't remember the name. I was like, oh, yeah, it's Jimmy.
Wow. You must have had very important things in your mind to forget Jimmy. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So, Chris, we're doing a Q&A today.
Yeah.
And it's a Thursday. That's what we do on Thursday. So you guys can send your questions about Google Ads, pay-per-click. And I was going to throw this out yesterday, Chris, when we were recording, but I'm going to throw it out today. And your personal questions. Like, let's just make it full YouTuber-style Q&A. Like, whatever you guys want to ask about, let's just throw it out there and see what comes in.
Yeah, send your romance questions, and we can answer those. I don't know if it would help. It'd be very telling if it helped. If people found those to be more informative and interesting, we would know what's holding back the show. And it's because of our Google Ads advice, if it improves, by talking about marriage.
I could give great advice on pretty much any topic, but...
Yeah. I bet you could. You are a very smart guy. All right. Let's go to our first question. And as Jason said, paidsearchpodcast.com. Click on the contact link, and you too can get your question answered on the show. Our first question comes from Mark from Orange County, California. He says, first of all, he butters us up. Always a good way to start, I have to say. Your podcast has been a lighthouse in a stormy, dark world of PPC information.
Stormy, dark world. You can take off the PPC information.
There you go. There we go. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, just kidding. You
know. In a stormy, dark world, period. And then also our PPC information is on the internet. Yeah, that's true. So thank you. All right. He says, I set my bids at the ad group level for $1 to start. On day one, all the keywords are eligible. I get some impressions. On day two, a couple of keywords are now showing with a status below first page bid, and I get a few less impressions overall. On day three, all of my keywords are now showing below first page bid, with Google telling me in the red below first page bid that those bids are now should be between $1 and $5 each. My question is, what am I to make of the keyword status here? What does it actually mean when Google tells me my keyword bids are too low to hit the front page? Great question. Jason, what you got for him?
Yeah, I think the best way, and you can let me know what you think about this, Chris, but I think it's really good advice. Look at below first page bid status as a yellow light, not a red light, not a green light, just a yellow light. Use it as a moment to reflect on your bids and take it as a suggestion from Google that you might need to raise your bids to get the volume that you want to get, but don't take it as a gunpoint to your head, forced robbery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to do what they say with below first page bid, but you can take it as a yellow light. Where am I at? Let me check what my bids are. What's my volume like? Are these keywords getting impressions? And I would say most of the time, it's probably an accurate representation that your bid is too low. I would say most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say. But go on your data. If your bids are a dollar and your budget is only $5 per day and you're getting traffic from keywords and search terms that you like and you're spending your full budget, good, keep doing it. Because let that data that you see in your impression columns and your search impression share loss due to ad rank columns, let that override the low bid status, below first page bid status. However, if you're not liking that primary data, you're not getting the impressions you want, the clicks you want, the impression share loss due to ad rank that you want, not spending the budget you want, then go, yeah, things do seem low, and I'm being told that this is a below first page bid. It's probably time to raise the bids a little bit. And I don't think it's alarming that the first day you didn't get that status and the second day you did, because Google gets more information as your account is turned on and starts running. So that would be my answer. Look at it as a yellow light as a time to see if you should raise your bids. How does that analogy sound to you, Chris?
I think that's an excellent analogy. Yellow light is appropriate because I think if your keyword is at a questionable quality, whether you're looking at the search terms, you're looking at conversions, if it's at a questionable level of quality, I would hope to see below first page bid warnings, because if you are getting full, you know, if you're full throttle and you're above first page bids, then what are you doing? I mean, is it really worth hitting full throttle on those keywords? And I don't want to rehash what you said. I want to add to it because I think that's a great answer. I think that's a good way to think of it. Let me explain, as Jason, you always love for me to just take it back to basics. Let me explain first page bid and what this means. First page bid is a representation of the most expensive clicks out there, the most competitive area, the most competitive time of day. That first page bid minimum is where that number comes from. So if it says first page bid of $450, that doesn't mean that every single search out there is going to require a bid of $450. It means there is a threshold to get up over and to be able to hit a possibility of ranking on the majority of searches, you need to be at $450. That doesn't mean that if you set it for $2, you'll never get any impressions, which you said right there, Mark, in your question, that you were still getting impressions. So don't feel that you have to, as Jason said, react and feel that they're pushing you to change your bids. That's absolutely not the case. I would say my last point here is the difference between your bid and your below first page bid estimate is an indication of how far you are from topping that hill. If you have a $2 bid and they say first page bid is $26, you know that you are a long way off and you're missing out on a lot of potential impressions. It's very competitive. There's something out there that you're just competing on. So consider changing your keywords, changing your bids, whatever. Now, if you're bidding $2 and it says first page bid is $216, you know that that's a much safer place. You have the throttle almost pushed all the way down to the ground. You just need a little bit of a bump to get up over that hill. So consider the difference between your bid and the first page bid, because that's a great indicator of just how much more competitive you need to be to get up over that hump.
You know, Chris, it always it's almost like a speed limit sign as well. It kind of tells you where you're at. So if you're going 20, bidding $2 and the speed limit is 25 and the below first page bid thing is like $2.50, you're in the neighborhood of the speed limit. Like, you're driving, you're not standing out, cars aren't honking from behind you. But if the speed limit is 25 and you're going 4 miles per hour,
there you go. Yeah.
In your account, you're bidding 10 cents, you're not getting any impressions, people are behind you honking. It lets you know kind of where you stand.
Yeah, good point.
So, Chris, next question. Oscar's from Latvia. Hey, my question is, what do you do in a situation where when you are reviewing your search terms report and see hundreds of search terms with one click, one impression, for example, and these keywords are spending a big part of the budget? They are relevant to my keyword list, but do not have conversions. One click, one impression, massive amount of search terms with that data. And then also, I guess we can also talk about keywords where you get a bunch of one click, one impressions.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a great question, because if you investigate over a significant period of time, or even just looking at data just from yesterday, you'll see that a significant portion of your clicks are entirely unique, non-repeated search terms. Even if you check for the past year, you'll still see, and I would say it wouldn't go so far as to say over 50% of your search terms volume. Now, I'm not talking about your total clicks. I'm just talking about the percentage of, you say you have 600 search terms. I would say at least 300 of those are going to be one click, one impression, or very close to it. It might be two impressions, one click, something like that. Okay, so this represents a large percentage of your total search term coverage. And the thing is, you can let it run and you won't get any more data on those one impression, one click, because it happened one time, someone did that search one way, and it's not going to be searched again that way, another time. And this is confirmed by Google with what they said. They said that 80% of the time people do searches in unique ways that hadn't been seen before. Yeah, I believe that's the statistic that they had said at one point, that searches are, you know, about 80% of the time it's a unique search that hadn't been done before. So
really?
Yeah. Not total. I'm talking about the same way as I said, I think what they're referring to is not the volume of clicks. It's instead if you look at all the searches.
Oh.
Right.
So like how to cheat on your wife is searched 990 million times.
In different ways.
But.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the right track. You're right.
Search 990 million times. And then there's also a lot of cheating on your wife. Where to cheat on your wife, how to not get caught and cheat on
right,
your wife.
Right.
Will your wife be mad if you cheat on her?
Yep.
Then which one is what percentage?
I don't know why you use these examples.
Well, no, I'm saying like 50% of the time or 80% of the time it's a unique search.
Right.
But that's just overall kinds of searches. So for every one, how to cheat on your wife, there's like 80% that are random
right.
little long tail ones, but the how to cheat on your wife one is still, the volume is still
exactly
way, way high.
It's not a question. It's not a, okay. It's not a metric of volume. It's a metric of uniqueness. It's
actual
a metric.
Search terms.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. But the very popular search terms are still searched.
Oh yeah.
When you're talking about volume. That way, it's like tons. Okay.
Right.
That makes sense.
If we would have measured in clicks, it might only represent, you know, 30% of your click volume. Something like that, because 70% are these top three searches, you know, that happen all the time, over and over again.
Gotcha.
But there's a whole lot of one click, one impression stuff. So great question. And Jason, I'll be curious to see what you say. But my approach is this: when it comes down to it, you can't just wait it out, because most of those searches are never going to get any more data. You'll never be able to say, well, it's just one click, one impression. I don't know that it's worth it until I get, you know, six clicks. That may never happen.
Oh, please don't talk like that, Chris. Yeah. I can't stand that kind of everything has to be statistically
right.
significant. No, use your brain.
You're going to waste so much time. It's going to be exhausting. So in the end, here's what I like to do. No amount of time is going to give you statistical information on it. What you have to do is you have to draw conclusions based on the similarity between these searches. I have a perfect example. I have a campaign that I've worked with that is selling a specific online legal document. And we have tons and tons of search data. And it seems like people just constantly search all kinds of different ways, because it's a very unique, this one legal document can be fulfilled for a lot of different situations. So what I found is the unique aspect of these searches was that all of them typically contained add my wife to, change
prenup.
Well, yeah, it's not that, but it could be, right? It could be that. So add my wife to, and then, or add my name to, remove my name from, change my grandmother's
gotcha.
Name, or put in my grandmother's name, or remove my grandmother from. It's the same kind of searches, and you can take that similar aspect, put that into a phrase, and you don't even have to have the core word in there. Right?
It or just, BMM.
Yeah.
Broad match modified.
Yeah. It could just be a phrase match, and it has to be in that order. And as long as you're capturing that, you're at 90% likelihood that they're talking about what you want to sell, but they didn't actually include, you know, that core term, very often. So that's one way that I approach it. I find the similarities. I try and mimic them through longer tail freeze match stuff.
It's very, very interesting the way we look at the world here. Your mindset goes to what do you do with those one click, one impressions search terms for adding keywords, making sure you show up on them.
Mm-hmm.
My mind goes to the world Remove. Will punch you in the teeth the day you're born and steal all your money and steal your family and steal your health and just use you and abuse you until they've sucked up everything out of you. Then they'll leave you to rot in the desert.
Wow.
Welcome to the world.
All right, thanks for watching the show, guys.
I started working when I was 15. That's what it is. These little kids went to their spring break senior year, and I was just working, you know? And then they went to, you know.
That's how you ended up where you
just
are.
Just a lot of work, but I love it. I love it. Yeah, I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. But, you know, they did go to spring break, and what is, they just went. Oh, they all went to Mexico.
I
have to work. What's wrong with you? Yeah.
I never did spring break.
And you know what they did? They all mingled with each other, mingled. Let's put it that way.
That's, yeah.
And a lot of feelings were hurt when they got back. That's but anyway, true. As I was saying, it's interesting that you're thinking about the one-click, one-impressions. Something is beeping to the left of me, and I'm going to move that. It's a little flashing light. It's extremely
just
annoying.
Just answer this question. Then
it's extremely... Then I can't. All right. I'll look this way.
Okay. That's a good...
You know, you ask someone to set up a studio the way you want, and...
Yeah.
It's interesting that you were talking about it from a positive angle, adding the keywords. My mindset, when I think one click, one impression search terms, I'm thinking about negative keywords. But you know what, Chris? It goes both ways.
Yeah.
Just like you're saying, find the core phrase. That's all you're trying to do with these one-for-one keywords. You're trying to find why you're showing up there. So whether it's to add a keyword like you were talking about or add a negative keyword, moving company scams. Moving companies that will scam you. If you see searches like that, I don't care about those one-for-one search terms. I don't care about the order they were in. I don't care about how many words they had in the phrase. My eyes go to the word scam.
Scam.
And I go,
yeah.
Oh, we got clicks from that. We would never get a client from that. Let me add the word scam and scams. Scamming, even though it didn't show up there, now it gives me ideas. And that's how I use those one-for-ones when we're talking about negative keywords. You look for the core, whether it's adding a keyword or adding a negative keyword. You look for the core issue there, and then you don't have to worry about it so much going down the list. Should I up the bid here? Should I down the bid here? One-for-one, you don't have enough data to make that decision, but you can still draw big ideas from it by looking at the core there.
Yeah. I really like that look of Jason. If you guys are watching... YouTube, feels like we're sitting at a restaurant and he's kind of got his feet propped up and we're just chatting about life. Okay, he's coming back. All right, so we have Joseph from Montreal. He sends in his questions.
Chris, I am not impressed with your performance.
Is this a joke? I don't understand. Okay, moving on. Joseph from Montreal. Sometimes Jason's jokes are only funny to him. That's great. That's great. Thanks for sharing that. I have begun conversion tracking. I know my conversions should be reserved for actions like lead generation, sales, etc. But I am in a B2B industry with very low conversions as the conversion cycle is long.
Did Chris write in?
Did I
with a pen name?
Yeah, this is me. So, in order to see my campaign, to see if my campaign is getting in front of the right eyes, I want to track performance metrics such as time on site, page views, etc. So, I set up conversion tracking to do so. And he gives some specifics about the type of conversion tracking. So, his question is using conversion tracking for this a bad strategy? Should I be using something else to do this? Jason.
We had to let that breathe a little bit. There is the complexity of this question. There's really, I would say there's no right answer here. Like, I want to go out on a limb and say, hey, if you're tracking lead forms, if you're tracking phone calls, those are good conversions to track. Keep doing it. But if you also have a long sales cycle and a low conversion rate because it's B2B, that makes sense. So if you want to track page views, if you want to track time on site, go ahead as softer conversions. I think that's fine to do. He had mentioned 30-second time on site, 2 page views. I would go a little stronger than that with the, especially when you're dealing with software conversions.
30 seconds.
I would maybe, I mean,
it seems, that seems
for some
short.
Of my campaigns, I do like 5 minutes, you know. I want someone, if I'm going to call someone a software conversion and call them a conversion and maybe put them on a remarketing list or something, I really like seeing some interest there.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these B2B sites, Chris, they'll have an email set up on the website and or a fax number, or they'll just have tons of phone numbers and you may not have tracking for everyone. So I want to know that those software conversions, I'm almost assuming like they contacted the company in some way. Maybe they clicked on the, maybe they copied the email address and sent an email directly. Maybe they wrote down a list of numbers and called back the next week. Maybe they went to the Facebook page and then contacted them on Messenger there. And I don't think they're doing that if they view just two pages. I want to see more than that. I want to see more time on site, multiple minutes.
What I do all the time is I leave the tab open on my phone because, you know, I want to go back. I want to give them a call, but it's Sunday afternoon, you know, and I'm not ready to call them yet. And then maybe
I'll
call
them. It's interesting you tell me that, because I do have clients where we're tracking calls and then we see a call come in like 6 weeks after the campaign closed and they're like, hey, why did we get a call? Thought I told you to turn off their campaign. I'm like, and my theory has always been, well, the only thing I can that makes sense here is that they left a tab open.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah, so that makes it's good to hear people do that. I do it too.
Or write it down. Write down the phone number somewhere. Make a note somewhere. Yeah, I do that all the time. So Joseph.
So hard and soft conversions. What do you think here?
My thought is this. I have a different answer. I thought you, Jason, you would go for the discussion as you did on Monday to talk about conversion value, which I think go back and
I'm getting there. I'm getting
go back
there.
And but so I'm gonna have a completely different answer. Joseph, my thought is this. I think Jason's answer about conversion value is a really good answer. But a secondary option is this. You can go to your conversion screen and click these individual conversions and uncheck track as conversion. You can uncheck that box.
Include in conversions.
Thank you. So that it still tracks as a quote unquote all conversions, but it's not a conversion. So
you are so confusing right now, Chris.
I know.
Maybe you would scream, but I'm saying all the words correctly.
I am. I'm literally saying every word correct.
Well, acknowledge that this is just confusing.
It's confusing language.
Break it down a bit.
So when I say all conversions, that's the literal term for it. An all conversion.
For a column. It's a column.
Is a column in Google Ads that you can add. It's called a all conversion column. Gosh, it's such a dumb naming. And then conversions is a separate column. That is the primary aspect whenever you're bidding on maximized conversions, return on ad spend, conversion value.
It affects your automated strategies.
It affects all your automated strategies, your enhanced CPC, all that stuff. So that is the number one.
That's a conversion.
That's a
column.
True conversion is a conversions column. And all conversions you could have 16 all conversions and only one conversions.
And then your cost per conversion, your conversion rate columns
is based on that
one.
Wrong,
Chris, will be based on that one conversion. So I have an example from Google's help article, and you can Google Ads help about the include in conversions setting. Example, you own an online clothing store and you track two conversions, one for each time a customer puts something in their shopping cart and another for a sale. First one will be soft, second one will be hard. You want to optimize your bidding for sales and track these conversions in your conversions column. You don't want to bid for the shopping cart action, and you don't need to see this data in your main conversions column. You check include in conversions for your sales conversion action. And by check, I mean, they mean make sure it's checked on, and uncheck the setting of including conversions for the shopping cart. Now your automated bid strategy will only optimize for your sales conversions, and your conversions column will only include sales conversions. However, data for the shopping cart action is still included in your all conversions column. Chris, maybe they'll take our nomenclature here and they'll start calling it hard conversions and soft conversions.
I would change the name. I would call one a like interest?
Conversion. Got to stick with conversion.
Conversion is a conversion. A all conversion can be changed to interest. So you have 16 interests.
How about a little a column named soft, gentle rub on the shoulder in a non-aggressive way? It's just something that's a little right. positive, but it doesn't mean much. A
consensual shoulder rub. And then
just a shoulder rub.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything, but it just lets you know something. It's positive. I don't know. Let's think here.
Interest.
Conversion.
Girlfriend. And then wife. Girlfriend column. Casual. Oh my God. And then wife. You've made a commitment. You actually love her. How about that one?
Goodfellas. Friday night for the girlfriend. Saturday night for the wife. What if they just straight up called it Fridays and Saturdays?
Fridays and Saturdays.
Can you imagine if someone was running Google ads and just didn't care anymore and just was like trolling everybody? But I don't know, but what about R? Oh wow. Wow. What about R conversion action, Chris? What are we going to call this? Are we going to stick? Because for our show,
we're going to stick to it. We're going
to
stick to it.
Hard and soft. That's what
I am not going to say those words.
Well, that's what I've been saying.
No, you could say
it all. You
say mayonnaise and all kinds of weird things all the time. I'm going to say all conversions.
Have you never had mayonnaise and peanut butter? Are you serious?
No, I don't feel that I'm in the minority there.
Well, I have. That's what I grew up on.
That's
so. You just trying to connect with the audience. But Chris, what are we going to call? Are you literally going to call it conversions and all conversions and continue this confusions?
Because if I don't, someone's going to say, Chris, you're using the wrong word. And every time I use the wrong word, I have to explain what the actual word is. Yes.
This whole podcast is basically in code at this point, Chris. Like, there's so many, like, you know what we got to do? We got to do one. We'll just call it the boring episode, like episode 200.
Okay,
we'll just do
200.
This is a boring episode, and we can just be like, we can go back to basics, like, and just like talk with the nomenclature, just the way we used to at the beginning, and see how it does. But I say hard and soft conversions.
Whatever. Okay.
You say whatever.
I'm going to say all conversions.
You say whatever. You continue this all conversions thing. Okay.
All right, Jason, hit the next one.
Fadi from Houston. How do you boost a certain ad group in a max conversion bidding campaign since we can't increase bidding on a single ad group?
I'm just going to take this one off because I do those manual bids, maybe, and make all that.
He just walked away, but I like this question. Immediately when Jason saw this one, he was like, I'm not sure. But this is something that I've had to learn by necessity because I have some clients that they like to have their hands in the campaign management and they want to do maximize conversion or something like that. They really insist on it. So I'm familiar with it. And here's my answer. It's pretty straightforward. I just use the devices. I'll put devices at 50% up, 30% up, 70% up.
At the ad group level, not the campaign level.
Yeah, at the ad group level. Boom. Done. That's my easiest way. And then I will very often add a note at the campaign level to say, you know, increased device bids.
Dumb.
Oh, okay.
Let me help you out,
okay,
Chris.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, here's how, just so everyone knows behind the scenes, like just when we were talking about scheduling yesterday, I give an idea, Chris rejects it, he has to accept it as his own idea, then he spits it out with like changing the words, and then I'm like, yep, that's a good idea.
That's right.
So let me give you an idea. Let's all watch it happen in real time. He'll say, I don't know, I like the campaign level naming thing, and then he'll go, yeah, I guess we could do it this way, and he'll start doing it this way going forward.
Right.
When you make these ad group level device bid adjustments to increase the max conversions or whatever the automated thing is, where just for one ad group and not the whole campaign, put the naming structure in the ad groups, Chris. Put a dash sign, and then at the end of it, the ad group name, put 20% or put 50%. Without the percentage, or just up or down or whatever. Some kind of naming structure so you can filter. Honestly, do it so you can filter by it. Like any filter with up. So put like up 20. And then what you can do is you can have a filter, say, for up. And they'll show you all the ad groups that you have an up device bid adjustment and see how they're performing. Then you can see if anyone need to go up higher or lower, and then you can change them to down if they go below 0%. Okay. You like that?
Yeah. That reminds me of something that I do. I very often have codes in my ad group naming so that I can monitor those directly on the screen. Reminds me of what I do.
Yep, it's a good idea.
That I thought of a long time ago.
Just so y'all know, when you start playing around with device bid adjustments and automated bidding, you got to know what you're doing. Like, I had an electrician out to my house yesterday, Chris. We were getting the air conditioning fixed, and he knows what he's doing. Like, I ain't going in that area because I could mess things up.
Yeah.
But he knew what he was doing. So if you start going in there, playing around with device bid adjustments and an automated strategy, you got to know what you're doing. So, like, one example of that is if you set your target CPA at $20 and then you have 100% bid adjustment.
It means
on
you're
there,
40.
I think it goes then to 40, but your ad group level still says 20. You got to know what you're doing there. You got to have naming structure. So it can get a little tricky there.
What does it mean then if you have a max cost per conversion set or a max return on ad spend set in the campaign, depending on, you know, what kind of bidding? Does that mean if you're bidding up 100%, the system's saying, well, this is at $40 cost per acquisition, but it's supposed to be 20. I mean, does it suddenly start slowing it down? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions there about how it all works, but that's what I do. That's how I do it. I don't really like it. All right.
Hey, guys.
John
from Facebook.
Now I am reading it. Start again.
Leave that in. That was good.
Hey, guys. John from Facebook. That's a really, I think we've gotten questions from the nation of Facebook before. Really a seedy country. Not really a favorite place of mine. Hey, guys. What are all the types of ad groups that you have in your campaign structure? I mean, in general, when you build a campaign for a client and you list the ad groups, what do you name them as? Things like type, service, local, general. And what John is referring to is back years ago when we did the Plano dentist build, which was something where we did a live build of a campaign week by week. We talked about
this so long ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. We talked about this naming nomenclature of naming things based on the type of keywords that are in each. So in one set, there will be service, and it'll say service cleaning, service teeth whitening, service surgery, something like that. Another one will say local, and it'll be local city name, local near me. So we name those so that you know that each one is referencing a service or local or general or type. And I'm curious about what you have to say about it, Jason, because it has been a long time since we did the Plano build. How has Jason changed in all that time?
I do this as simple as possible. Things have changed for me over the years, Chris. I started as a skagger. Well, honestly, I started as a grocery bagger. That's when I started at 15 and a half, yeah.
Beautiful. Can we finish that whole thing out? I started as a grocery bagger, then I moved into a skagger. Come on. And then nothing?
I did a podcast with you and it made me madder.
Nah, so Chris, there we go.
if you look at some of my ad groups generally these days, we're talking one word names. We're talking one word.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I have become rage and hate. That's all I hear in my head when I think about complexity with Google Ads. Rage and hate.
Rage and hate. It's a great name of
rage
a band.
Rage and hate.
I'd probably listen to that.
It's a good podcast name too.
Rage and hate. I love that.
But you know, Chris, it's just I'm so good at what I do. And every now and then I run into people who try to mess it up, different people I work for, you know, just sometimes they're not good fits. Sometimes they're actually really good fits and we make a lot of money, but it's just, we have different ideas about ways to go about things. And I have come to the conclusion that going as simple as possible is seriously where it's at. That's how you get the best performance. That's how everybody involved makes the most money. Not everything has to be simple. Some things aren't simple. But you forgot the last two words to my outlook here, Chris. simple as possible. Mm. As possible.
It's possible, yeah.
Not simple, simple as possible. So what is simple as possible when it comes to ad group names? It's basically one word. So if I want to do the suburb of Edmond, then I create an ad group called Edmond. If I am doing movers and commercial movers and specifically commercial moving keywords in Edmond, number one, I would never do that probably because that's too complex for a low volume thing. Just people search for commercial movers in the metro. You can have a commercial ad group. But if for whatever reason I wanted to do that, I would have an ad group called commercial-Edmond. So usually one word that works because I have themed ad groups and generally not that many because they're themes. And the other thing I keep in mind when I'm naming ad groups, and this he didn't ask about this, Chris, but this is super important. I can't talk about ad group names without bringing this up. The filter button. The filter button. So I'm always thinking about naming structures and ways to make things easy to set up filters. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. I run into a lot of situations on complex campaigns where you have to run multiple campaigns, but then I want to change the bids for a certain topic and I want to see that topic slash ad group on multiple campaigns so I can change the bid. And so I have filters set up for it. I'm making things as simple as possible, but I'm also thinking about ways to filter things when I want to look at it. So that's how I do ad group name structures. And Chris, I don't want to hear about Plano. I don't want to hear about dentist in Plano. I don't want to hear about what I did in that build. This is a dynamic situation we're in. Things change all the time. And I could not tell you what I came up with at that time. And I could probably bet that it's different than what I do now. And now I'm simple as possible, but I'm thinking about filters as well.
Yeah.
What about you?
John, it was a good question, but honestly, I feel like...
Are you saying it's too account independent?
Yeah, it's not how I think anymore. And I'm going to prove that this is a good thing and that we are responding to what we've been given. I'm going to lay out a truth for you, okay? The truth for you. Here it is. You would agree, John, if you've been doing Google Ads for any, even a short period of time, you know that the amount of automation that has come through the system has been significant over the past, let's say, 4, 3, 2 years. It has changed significantly. Especially
2 years, I'd say.
Yeah, especially since the time we started this podcast. Certainly since the time since we did the Plano Dennis build. So if that's the case, then what happened is we've moved from a time, 3 years ago, of where you really needed to control and itemize and be meticulous about having a lot of ad groups and structuring those and having city names in separate ad groups and breaking those out. And in reality, what we've moved to is now there's a huge situation where a lot of the stuff is automated and we have to make decisions based on how is the system best going to interpret this keyword. Google has pushed us, which I think is for good and bad in different ways, but they've pushed us to making decisions that where we don't make the final decision. We put information into the system, and the system is best used with a little more loose, it's a little looser. You don't say, I want every keyword that has this city name to show up here, and it has to have this ad. The system doesn't respond well like that. And because of that, I no longer name my stuff meticulously like that anymore because I no longer have local where I have 5, 6 different city names. I no longer have 5, 6 different types or 5 or 6 different general or service ad groups. I just don't do it anymore because the system has changed. The environment has changed. And whether you think that's good or bad, that's a completely different discussion. The point is, it's changed.
So we haven't talked about this a lot to each other. We talk about other things together when we're alone. And it sounds like we are both pretty much down to... This isn't a hard rule. Like, there's other things that go on in accounts. But would you say generally you keep it pretty simple like I do in terms of one word to describe the topic or the theme or whatever?
Yes.
Like, give generally. Me an example. Pick out an account in your mind and...
Generally, yes. So I just built one. It was, of course, B2B. It was a microbiological industry that is working on lab testing stuff. So, of course, typical Chris stuff is like super complex and hard. I don't know why I don't just do
see that
movers.
You see that flex right there?
That's right. I wish I just did movers, you know? If you're like, yeah, movers, that's so much better.
Yeah, because that's the way it is. Yeah, that's what gets the performance for the movers, just movers. Okay. Keep thinking, you know.
Okay, so the thing is, with this, I have like four different ad groups, and every one of them was just, I just named it based on the core keywords. You know, it was based on quality control and laboratory testing and things like that. So,
okay, so for laboratory testing keywords, whatever those keywords are,
just called it lab test.
What's your ad group name? Is it just lab test?
Yeah, lab testing. Yeah,
yeah, that's the way I do it.
I didn't name it service or interest or high funnel, low funnel. No, I just named it lab testing. Yeah. And there's like five ad groups and that was it. No super complex naming. That's it.
Boom. Love it. Chris, I freaking love these Q&As.
They are fun. I
learn a lot too. It's good to reflect. And I also think about my own processes and strategies. I'm like, yeah, I could be doing it better this way. I could be doing it that way.
No,
this makes sense. No, that doesn't make sense. So I like it. I am not impressed with your performance.
I don't. If it's a cultural reference, a movie, a video, it's going to go right over my head because I just don't really keep up with that. So I hope everyone's in loving Jason's jokes because they're really hitting hard today. That's super funny. All right. Well, that's it. We appreciate you guys listening. We do the show twice a week. And for our super elite guys who like to just lay back in our exclusive lounge, smoke cigars, and just live a life of just pure luxury, for an additional $2 they get to join that super deluxe lounge, and you can listen to the Patreon show where we share the absolute
access
secret. I was going to say we share,
and you get access to our face.
There's
what's
a,
the secret?
The secret. Well, we can't.
I forgot.
We can't tell you. But we tell every week, we talk about the secret of Google Ads.
And you get access to our Facebook group for Patreon members only. And all the patrons out there that haven't joined the group yet, join the group on Facebook. A lot of interesting stuff going on in there, Chris.
Quite a few in there.
It's just good to see that when stuff happens to one Google Ads manager,
it's happening to all of
us. It's happening to others.
Yeah.
You can get advice out there. And then also people just have more general questions as well. Like someone was asking about a certain column of data, and then not only do they get the answer, which you can get online, but you got a lot of context too.
Yeah,
from what some it, of the other
how to
members,
interpret so. It, not just what it is, but you know what it means to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, what to do about it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Thursday with a Q&A, but also Monday with our main show, where we will continue our trek through the perfect Google Ads campaign.